This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Have you ever picked up a new book and thought to yourself, this is going to be huge? That's exactly how I felt the day I read the new YA novel, Firekeeper's Daughter. It's a page-turning thriller about 18-year-old Donis Fontaine. Her dad was Anishinaabe, and her mom is a white woman and part of a wealthy family. When people in her Upper Peninsula community start falling prey to a mysterious drug epidemic, Donis is drawn to find out what's happening. Angeline Booley is the book's author. An educator and administrator, she spent time growing up in many of the locations in Firekeeper's Daughter, including Sugar Island. Booley is an enrolled member of the Sault Ste. Marie Band of Chippewa Indians and a former director of the Office of Indian Education at the U.S. Department of Education. This book was at the center of a bidding war that reportedly included 12 publishing houses. It's been optioned by Barack and Michelle Obama's production company for development as a Netflix series. Angeline Booley, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
You open the novel with an extremely dramatic scene and one that repeats throughout the book with little different bits of context. It's such an attention-grabbing read. Do you mind reading it out loud for us?
Oh, I would love to. I am a frozen statue of a girl in the woods. Only my eyes move, darting from the gun to their startled expression. Gun, shock. Gun, disbelief. Gun, fear. The thumb, the thumb, the thumb. The snub-nosed revolver shakes with tiny tremors from the jittery hand aiming at my face. I'm gonna die. My nose twitches at a greasy sweetness. Familiar. Vanilla and mineral oil. WD-40. Someone used it to clean the gun. More scents. Pine. Damp moss. Skunky sweat. And cat pee. The thumb, the thumb, the thumb. The jittery hand makes a hacking motion with the gun, as if wielding a machete instead. Each diagonal slice toward the ground gives me hope. Better a random target than me. But then terror grips my heart again. The gun, back at my face. Mom, she won't survive my death. One bullet will kill us both. A brave hand reaches for the gun, fingers outstretched, demanding, give it now. The thumb, I am thinking of my mother when the blast changes everything.
Such an incredible scene. Were you always a fan of thrillers and mysteries?
Yes, I was. Both of my parents were just and still are tremendous readers. And so as a kid, we always had books. We always went to the library. And so I started out with the Nancy Drew. My brother read the Hardy Boys. I read the Hardy Boys. And it kind of grew from there. I think in elementary school, liking Robert Cormier, I Am the Cheese, that kind of really threw me for a loop. That a story could have such a twist at the end like that. And then I, of course, love Shirley Jackson and pretty much everything written by Lois Duncan. And so just that thriller that always has this twist and really what you think you're reading, and then at the end you realize that there was another story that was happening.
It's so elegant the way you bring us back to this scene again and again with a little bit more detail each time and build that reveal. Could you tell us a little bit about when and how you first started to build this story centered around one traumatic night in your head?
Actually, it started about 38 years ago, believe it or not. So when I was a senior in high school, a friend of mine went to a different school and she told me about a guy in her senior class, a new guy, and she thought he would be my type. And I asked about him from time to time, but she let me know, oh, he, you know, doesn't play sports and hangs out with the stoners. And then at the end of the school year, she, you know, was all excited and told me there was a major drug bust at the school. And it turned out that officer was an undercover narcotics officer. And it just made me think about, like, what if there were an undercover investigation in my school? What if I was in classes with a person? And what if I liked them? And what if they liked me? And really the idea for the story was like, wait, why would some undercover investigation need an ordinary person's help? And so that's kind of where the story started all those years ago. And then throughout my career, I've always worked in tribal communities and just seeing some of the issues that went on. And also then that spawned into identity issues. Kids were still hearing the same things that I heard when I was growing up about, you know, oh, you don't look Indian, or, you know, not being Indian enough. And my daughter was a preteen at the time, about 12 years ago, when I decided to write this Indigenous Nancy Drew story. And that's how it all started.
Let's talk a little bit about your heroine, Donis Fontaine. She's in the middle of trying to figure out exactly where she fits in. She's biracial. She's really smart and has an aptitude for chemistry, but she's also kind of a jock. She plays hockey. And she and her best friend, Lily, they're both Native, but they're not enrolled in the Sioux tribe. Why did you make that decision that was something you wanted to explore?
I thought that was really interesting to have that be a major part of the story about identity, because young adult stories are about coming of age and discovering who you are and finding your place in the world or in your community. And when you're biracial, that adds another element that other people might not understand. And, you know, it gets into things like colorism and microaggressions and code switching and all of these things of how is my identity perceived by others, and at what point does it come from within me? And you learn to tune out or shut out those outside voices telling you what you are or are not.
As if all of that weren't enough, Donis, who's just 18 years old, life has run her through several hard things. Her uncle died, her grandmother has had this stroke, and her mom is just sleepwalking through the grief of these and other things in their lives. In your observation, that dealing with that level of hardship, could you tell us a little bit about what you see that doing to young women?
I think that Donis finds herself in this caretaker role of her mother has been the caretaker. And then Donis realizes her mother is running herself ragged, taking care of the grandmother, and has taken care of Donis and has gone through these traumatic things that Donis has also. But she sees that her mother has no one taking care of her. I wouldn't say it's a burden. Maybe Donis might see it as such in the beginning of, there's no one to look after her but me. I have an obligation to make sure I can't just leave her like this. And plus she overhears her mother kind of confessing this, you know, deep-seated fear about losing Donis if she moves away, that she's not going to be able to endure the absence of Donis.
Yeah. The aspects of Anishinaabe culture and spirituality that are sort of the cross threads in this story, it's done in a way that invites people in who may not be familiar, but I imagine also provides a lot of stable context to people who are reading this, you know, maybe having grown up in the UP or maybe as part of the tribe. As you were writing, was there anything that was useful to keep in mind as you thought about how you were going to incorporate things in a way that was respectful, but that also, you know, also let the story serve as a window?
Well, I do believe that stories do provide that window, but it's important to have a curtain over that window too at times. And in particular, for Indigenous authors, I think it's really important if you're going to write anything about ceremony or things that perhaps aren't shared outside of your community, to really be mindful of your audience. And once you write those words, you give up ownership of that. And you just need to be very careful. So I had this mantra while I was writing the story that I write to preserve my culture and I edit to protect it. And so I don't include specifics about ceremony. I'll do the fade to black because that's not for people outside of those ceremonies to know.
At the same time, it's a really generous read in terms of not just describing things that would be important to Donis in her life, but helping us feel them. There's a point at which someone in the story dies and the action slows down as Donis is meditating and sort of having in her mind what's happening to the deceased, that the deceased is spending one day thinking about or confronting his or her loved ones and spending one day reckoning with everyone and everything she's ever done harm to in her life. It was such an interesting way of having the story keep pace with Donis's understanding and experience of what was happening.
Sure, because the third day of Injekid, which is in Ojibwe teachings, when someone passes, it's a four-day journey for them to go to the next world. And each of those days has a specific purpose. And so it really fit with the story that as this loved one is making that journey, the third day is for learning new ways. That is when Donis is introduced to some new things, and her, at first she's reluctant, but really realizing, wait, this is the day to learn new things. And I thought that that would be a good way to show how our knowledge about our culture, it informs how we live our lives and decisions that we make.
Another thing that I just loved so much about the book is I was just 100% there for the elders' jokes. All the elders' jokes. Lines like, I don't have enough years left to tell you what's wrong with this pasty. Or, have you seen her drive? She never even lets that Mustang gallop. I mean, it was...
Yeah, and the elders who pat the hood of their car and say, good pony.
Good pony, just... yeah, right.
Yeah.
They were such a delight. I could really see them.
Yeah. Oh, well, I love my elders. And I was so fortunate. I worked for my tribe for maybe a dozen years. And part of that time, I oversaw our elder division and cultural and education divisions. And so I did spend a lot of time with our elders too, and would have lunch with them. And just the things that they say that just would crack me up. And then I've got a lot of relatives there. And then my dad's always saying stuff too. So I just love elder humor.
As Donis is trying to unravel this mystery that is doing so much damage in her community, she makes a lot of choices that stem from her need for justice. But at a certain point in the book, she comes to see that need in a different definition than the justice that traditional law enforcement, tribal or otherwise, can offer. And she makes this comment that the community needs to be part of any solution. What was that about for you? At what point did you come to a realization that you needed that to be part of the story?
I have spent my career working in different tribal communities. And when communities identify issues and come up with the programs or services to address those needs, they are more successful than solutions imposed upon a community by entities outside of that community. Solutions are always better coming from within.
You managed to do so many different kinds of lifts in this book. It's a real ripping thriller. But at the same time, there's so much here as a coming of age story for this young woman, and sort of just figuring out her place in her tribe and where she's meant to move into the world, and all her interpersonal relationships with her families and the importance of girl friendship. You've worn so many professional hats. Which of them do you think was most important to pulling this book together?
I think that my work with tribal teens has been the most important. Working with students in school or after school programs or summer youth programs, just spending time with teens and hearing them when they let down their guard and they talk freely around you, and that they experience similar things. And then there are other ways that they're experiencing things that I could never have fathomed when I was growing up. And so I think that those are the things that have helped me to write a story that is relatable.
As you think back to that yourself as a young reader, the Nancy Drew reading kid who was getting drawn into narrative, is there anything that you wanted to make sure was in this book that might reach out to young readers, I guess non-native too, but maybe especially to young native readers, and what you wanted this book to make available to them?
I really wanted teen readers, especially those who are biracial, to see themselves in a story. It wasn't until I was a senior in high school that I read a book where the protagonist was native and, you know, had a native father and a non-native mother. And once I saw it, I realized, wait, I haven't seen this before. And why is that? That's why identity is such a powerful theme in stories, because for all of the readers, all the teens out there who have felt that living in both worlds or not enough or, you know, whatever struggles they go with, to feel seen in a story, I think that can do wonders for your self-identity. I think that books and stories can do so much to help young people.
Angeline Bulley's debut novel is Firekeeper's Daughter. It's going to publish mid-March, and you can get in an early request for it with your favorite bookseller right now. Angeline, the book is so amazing. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, miigwech. Thank you. It's just wonderful. I'm such a fan, and I'm really proud to have a story that's written in my set in my tribal community in Michigan, and it's almost like the location becomes a character. It plays an integral part in the story, and so just thank you for this opportunity to share Firekeeper's Daughter with listeners.